Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill.
Hey everyone, AC here, and I have a quick announcement before we have Camille Freeman on the show. Camille Freeman is a nutritionist and herbalist, and we have an amazing conversation with her about her practice and some pro tips for other practitioners. She runs this amazing program called Monday Mentoring for other nutritionists and herbalists to get together and talk about case studies and talk about their practice. And she's full of great tips, so I know you're going to enjoy this episode. But first, I just wanted to take a moment to let you know about this exciting learning opportunity coming up with one of our former guests on the Plant Cunning Podcast and one of my mentors, Pam Montgomery. Pam's an earth elder, and she's an author and educator who's been deepening her own connection with nature and communication with nature for decades. So she's a wealth of knowledge. She's very inspiring. And she is opening up her doors on her 7th month program, May 15th, 2023. And so you still have time to sign up, so you can follow the link below to learn more about it. And if you're watching this in real time, we're doing a free online event this Saturday. I'll post that link in the description as well. So if you want to get some more feelers for Pam and learn more about what co-create a partnership with nature means, you can come to the free event on Saturday. We already have over 700 people registered, so it's gonna be fun, and I hope to see you there. Thanks for listening and enjoy the episode. Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we're thrilled to have Camille Freeman on the show. Hi, Camille, how are you?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So Camille, you're a nutritionist, you're an herbalist, you're a professor, an educator, and you have this really robust program for mentoring other health practitioners, especially herbalist nutritionists, on their way. Any other details that you want to share just briefly about yourself?
I think that sums it up pretty well. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, cool. So we do have a traditional first question for the Plant Cunning Podcast, and it's, how did you come to the plant path?
Yes. Well, I listened to the podcast, so I've been thinking about this one. I knew it was coming. And my very first exposure to plants was actually when I was in high school. Well, it was not my first exposure to plants, but the plant path. My English teacher, Mrs. Strunk, shout out to Mrs. Strunk. I was doing a sort of year-long project, and I was really interested in sort of natural medicines and things like that. And she suggested that I look into echinacea. And so I did this whole project on echinacea, and I actually wrote, this was before the internet was what it is today, and it was like 1994 or something. I wrote off a letter to Jim Duke, you know, I wrote a letter and sent it off to him at the USDA. Uh-huh. And he did write back, and I mailed off for issues of Herbalgram, and, you know, you went to the library and you had to do the card catalog and hard copy and all that. So I did this whole project on echinacea and was really interested in the whole thing. And then I went off to college, and that I didn't know that there was a career path. It really hadn't occurred to me that there was, you know, that was more than just like, oh, it's like studying the Civil War or something. You know, it's like a thing.
Okay, yeah.
But I didn't know you could become an herbalist. And so I went to undergrad, and I learned partway through, I think 2 years in, I realized that there is such a thing as a naturopath, which I'd never heard of in my life. And then I was like, oh, I could do that. So I took all the prerequisites, you know, like the organic chemistry and all the things. And then I graduated and I realized, like, wait a minute, this is very expensive. It's very expensive. And I looked through the catalog of what they offer at naturopathic schools. And I was like, the only classes I'm interested in are the herb ones. So I was like, let me just hold off on paying all this money and see what else, you know, doesn't seem like the best fit for me if I only want to take these three classes and hundreds of thousands of dollars later. So I took a little pause on that. And then this is a rambling story, sorry, but I was living on Orcas Island, and I was taking a trip across the country, and I was in by Greyhound, do not recommend, but I was in New Mexico, and I went to a farmer's market, and there was a table. I was sleeping in a tent in the RV park. Also do not recommend. Anyway, there was a table at the farmer's market and it said herbalist apprentice wanted. And that was the first time I ever had heard of an herbalist. And cool. I talked to the woman and I finished my trip, but then I wound up moving there and becoming her apprentice. That was Monica Rude in Silver City, New Mexico.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. So she had a herb farm where she grew mostly, she made fire cider and salves. And so we grew like lots and lots of cayenne, holy basil, all this stuff. It was mostly medicine making and farming. And so I apprenticed there, living in a plastic yurt in New Mexico in the summer, which is also quite an adventure. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of how I got started. And then I realized, oh, I want to learn more about people. And, you know, the growing part and the medicine making part is cool, but I was really interested in the clinical. Yeah. And so then the program at Thai Sophia, the first master's in herbal medicine, opened up right then. So I moved there and did that. And that kind of started me down this path.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it was, I was going to ask you like, what came first, herbs or nutrition? And it was sort of nutrition, but then the nutrition led you to the herbs, right? And then
Basically, I sort of backed into nutrition from herbs.
Did you find that after you had herbal training that you felt like you needed more? And so you went towards the nutrition side of things? Is that what sort of that progression looked like?
Yeah. Well, actually what happened is I got my master's in herbal medicine. I started practicing as an herbalist. And then I was like, oh, I'm really interested in the body. You know, I want to know more about how the body works and how the herbs interface. So I actually went back to school and got another master's in physiology. So that I could learn more about that piece of things. And the state of Maryland just had a thing where, because of my degrees, I was able to sit for the licensing exam for nutrition.
Okay.
So that is kind of, I guess herbs are technically dietary supplements. And so that's not a possibility anymore, I don't think. I don't know. But then I did get a doctorate in nutrition after that whole process, just recently, actually, relatively recently. Okay. Yeah.
Very cool. And then with your clinical work, do you mind just, can you just tell us a little bit about your clinical practice and who you see and how the herb side and the nutrition side work together?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So my clinical practice right now is very small. I take a very limited number of clients, but back in the past, my main focus has been fertility, pregnancy, menstrual health, that sort of thing. So I started out, my actually first work as a clinician was in an OBGYN office. That was back in the day. I actually drove around my resume, a hard copy, to a bunch of OB offices and handed it out. And one of them called me back and they, you know, had, it wasn't an employer situation. It was an independent contractor type of deal, but I was practicing out of their office and working with their clients. So a lot of pregnant people, a lot of people who are looking to conceive, postpartum, all that kind of stuff. And then I did go on to also practice in one of the biggest IVF clinics in the country. They have a sort of partnership with a company called Pulling Down the Moon that focuses on nutrition, acupuncture, massage, that kind of thing for fertility. And so I was working there for a long time. So that's kind of, that's been my main focus. Although I'm always telling people that you have a focus area. And sometimes people feel like that's limiting, like, oh, I don't only want to do one thing. But in reality, the whole time, the 15 plus years I've been in practice, really only about half of my practice has been whatever I say, you know, if I say I'm doing fertility, the other half is, you know, people who have migraines or nutrition, you know, it's not like just because I say I work on that, it's limiting to me, but it does help me, you know, it helps me have some specific expertise and in some areas. So that's mostly what I do. And so now, you know, I take on maybe two new clients a month at this point, just because of time constraints and some of the other programs and activities that I'm running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. Cause you want to have some kind of specialty so people can refer people to you who, you know, you've got the expertise in this specific thing, but also some of those people might have other things wrong with them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because working in fertility and pregnancy, a lot of people do wind up getting pregnant. And then sometimes it's like, oh, well, my child is now 5 and they have something else going on. They want to come back and work with me, even though you know, obviously their 5-year-old does not have any fertility challenges. So it's just like you become, you develop relationships with people and then you're sort of part of the system as they move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find, was that how you did things like headaches and so on, or were you just seeing, you know, people, anybody who came in?
Yeah. A lot of times it's word of mouth. And right. So I'll work with somebody on fertility and they'll be like, oh, that was really amazing. Mm. They'll tell their friend and their friend's like, well, I have migraines. Do you think she could help me? Yeah. And they might be like, well, I don't know, give her a call. And so they give me a call. And if I have room, then I'm happy to work with people outside of that. So it's kind of nice because if I'm full with fertility and pregnancy and that kind of thing, then I can just refer people to somebody else who might be a good fit. But if I have some openings and I'm like, oh yeah, it's kind of fun to branch out a little bit. And of course, people who have fertility challenges also have headaches and digestive things. And, you know, so it's not like I only work on the menstrual cycle with people. Mm-hmm. We're looking at whole body health. And so I get a lot of chances to, you know, fiddle with other things as well.
Yeah, it does seem like oftentimes if, well, problems are tied up with each other.
Totally.
And if, the whole system isn't working well, then it's going to show up in a lot of different areas. So healing the whole system helps everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times people are surprised because they think, oh, you coming in, my focus is fertility and menstrual health and all this stuff. And sometimes the work we're doing has really nothing to do with hormones. You know, I'm not just giving Vitex out and working with white peony and all this stuff. It's like, oh no, sometimes you need to back it up a few levels and work on stress. And we're only doing adaptogens and nervines and lifestyle stuff. And it downstream, it affects fertility, but it's not, you wouldn't look at the formulas we're working with and say, oh, that's a fertility formula. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of the building block we need in order to get people to where their fertility is optimal or as best they can get it.
Yeah,
totally.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder, like, what kind of herbal formulas do you use mainly? Like, are you using a lot of tinctures or a lot of teas and infusions, or what are your preferred ways of administering herbs?
Yes. So I personally love tinctures, but I also find I don't run my own apothecary. Like there's only so many things I can do. Yeah. That's not one of them. So I find that they're just cost prohibitive for a lot of people at the doses that I want people to be using. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, if you take 15 mils of tincture a day, that adds up really fast if you're doing it from a retail environment or even a compounding dispensary. So if I do have some people that really don't have financial constraints and also no objections to alcohol and those types of things. And so we sometimes work with tinctures, but I find that infusions are really one of my main go-tos for my fertility clients, mainly because, you know, so many people, I feel like everybody needs to be on a nervine. You know, no. Like you just universal. I joke around with
these
people
days,
that,
yeah.
That I'm like, I would like for everybody to just take a lot of chamomile for 2 weeks and then come start working with me. Okay. We can just start out with that baseline.
That's a great idea.
I haven't implemented that yet, but I would love to. but I do find that the, you know, decoctions or infusions are such a great way to get people to slow down a little bit. And especially with fertility and menstrual cycle stuff, I find that cycle is really sensitive to, you know, alterations in circadian rhythm, alterations in stress, tension, tightness. And so I think that just the act of drinking a tea is part of the medicine. And so I do like, if it's feasible, and it's not always, as you probably know, it's not always feasible for people to prepare and drink, you know, an infusion or a decoction, but if it is, I do really love to have that be part of people's daily ritual.
And that's it. It's a ritual. Yeah. It's
yay.
I'm right here. What are you drinking? What are you drinking?
I am actually drinking an adaptogenic blend right now. It's got it's actually a rasa.
Oh, yeah.
A rasa blend. Yeah. I like to do a couple. So I've got like the peppermint cacao thing and I've got I don't even remember what all else is in it.
Yeah, we love the Rasa. We interviewed Ben Levine from Rasa and he sent us some samples and
it's really tasty.
Yeah, but I think like what you were saying about the ritual of somebody creating an infusion for themselves or creating the tea and then taking the time to drink it also acts on our nervous system. And to a lesser extent, maybe taking the tincture too, you're reaching for this bottle that says, that has on the label, like what it's going to do for you. And you're telling your body, I'm ready to do these things. And so, you know, the herbs are doing their part, but also the person is doing their part to like actually get the herbs in their system, you know? And I think that's an important part of it for sure. Yeah.
That reminds me of something I was thinking about recently, which is I've been doing this hormone deep dive. And one of the things we talk about hormones is people think, oh, you know, your estrogen is high, your estrogen is low, or whatever other hormone. But in reality, yes, the blood levels of the hormones are important, but the receptors are also, you know, like it doesn't matter how much hormone is in the blood if there's no receptor to hear it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that teas are the same way. It's like this, when we're drinking a tea, we are acting like the receptor because we're actively opening ourselves up to the plants. It's like the plants can be all around us, but if we don't hear them, by engaging with them, it doesn't, I mean, this, I think there is benefit from being around them just physically. But I think when we choose to actively ingest them, it's kind of like expressing a receptor in opening ourselves to the message, like the communication with the plant as a conscious act. And I think that's really special.
Yeah, it's a dialogue, you know, it's engaging with the person and the plant, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm teaching this class right now, which is an herbal class for nutritionists. It's just like basic herbs for people who, you know, have clinical training, but don't have any herbal training. And it's been really interesting to think about how do we, when we're working with the herbal model, it's so much more complex than, you know, take this for that thing. And it has been helpful to think about it as, oh, it's a conversation. I've been saying analogies, like it's kind of like making friends where, you know, there's certain people that you're interested in or you vibe with on a friend level, and there's certain people you don't. And it's not like, oh, there's something wrong with that person. They might just not be your person. And I feel like it's the same with herbs. Like there's nothing, I don't particularly love red raspberry leaf myself, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's just like not my herb.
Yeah.
And so it is like, you've got to open up that communication and find out how your body and the herb talk to each other and all that type of thing.
And when you're working with a client, like how much is the herbs and how much is your focus on the herbs versus lifestyle, nutrition, and like mental health? And, you know, obviously you're treating someone as a whole person and there's all these different facets of a person. So like, what is your focus? Does it kind of depend on the person or?
Yeah, this is such a good question. And it's one that I'm constantly going back and forth with, because I think the temptation, especially for, I know a lot of people in this world have just lots of different interests and trainings and certificates, and it's so tempting to just do it all. Where you're like, oh, well, here's the things we could do with nutrition and here's the things lifestyle, you know, they could rest more and they could do some yoga and they could go outside and they could garden and they could, there's 12 herbs I know of that would be great for them and their fish oil is a little low, and, you know, all these types of things. So tempting to just provide everything and feel like it's a comprehensive overview. And I have just really found over the years that it's most helpful for the person to just start with one place, like start simple with a few things. And so what I try to do is just see what's emerging as the most likely to make a difference for them right now and the easiest stepping stone. Like what's the lowest hanging fruit so that they can start with a win and be like, I can do this and it feels better. Like I feel better. And then if we can do that, then we move on to the next thing. So it's part of it is working with myself to say, okay, I've got 800 things that I think would really help this person. I'm going to edit, not going to share all of them. I'm going to see, you know, you have to do your filtering of what's really needed right now. And what, because it's just, oh, I've learned the hard way that it's overwhelming. People get your long list of here's your tincture, here's your tea, 4 capsules, you know, eat more protein, and they don't come back because they aren't successful. You know, they're like, I didn't do it. So I'm not going to schedule another appointment because I'm going to wait till I do it. And they never do it because it's busy, you know, life's busy and they feel guilty or they just forgot or whatever. So I found that if you can be like, all right, first order of business, calm the nervous system, drink your Nervine tea, eat breakfast at a regular time, come back in 2 weeks, see how you're doing. And so when you phrase that as like, okay, here's phase one.
Okay. Yeah.
Do that. And then phase, so people know this isn't all I have to offer, but I want to just ease you into it. And I see, you know, see the same thing with dietary nutrition stuff. It's like everybody, there's so many things that we could probably all be doing to optimize our diets and tweak, but it's overwhelming. And so like, I find that I work with a lot of practitioners who know if the problem isn't that you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
The problem is you're not doing it. Right. So again, if you start small and do it, develop that habit, do the one little thing, it snowballs. But it's just the where to start. You need somebody to help you filter more than to help you educate, help you learn. A lot of people do.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. When you have that giant list, it's like, I, you know, it's so overwhelming. Well, I can't do all these things. And then you might pick one thing, but it's like from the patient or the client, they don't know which is the most important thing either.
Yeah.
So having the skill to like, know, like of these things, what is the most important to start with is that seems very, very helpful.
Yeah. I think that philosophy is also built on the idea that it's a relationship.
Yeah.
It's not a one-time scenario. So it's like, we're not just meeting each other once and then I'm going to tell you what to do and you're going to do it and everything's fine now. Like
right.
We're cultivating a healing relationship where we're working together to figure out, you know, how to best serve your body in a way that works for your circumstances right now, which is different if you are the parent of a small child or you're in school or you're, you know, running a farm or whatever you're doing. It's a different scenario.
Yeah. And that approach of like having a person to help you through the process, and it's not just a one-off and it's not just like a, here's this pill and never come back to my office that maybe people experience with like traditional MDs, like what a refreshing approach to have someone who's going to be like a partner basically in your health journey and have these like steps laid out and create a plan. Because when it's yourself, like you can completely not see what the steps that you need to take are just so completely overwhelmed. Even if you do see those steps, that yeah, having someone who's going to help you along that path is just really such a gift, you know?
Yeah. And you make such a good point that even if you do have the skills and the knowledge, trying to do it for yourself, it's really hard. It's like, I'm an herbalist. I should be able to figure out a formula for myself, but it's actually much better for somebody else to have an objective look and say, actually, I think you would do really well with, you know, to come up with something for me. It feels really good to have an outside set of eyes. And even when it comes to my children, I often have to call up some of my friends to be like, what should I do?
it's so
really
true.
Hard.
Yeah. And then they say it and you're like, oh, I knew that. If it was your kid, I could have thought of that.
Totally. Yes, of course. Lemon balm. Why didn't I know?
But yeah, we get these like blocks, you know, when it's personal.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say that it's like really good to not to recognize that and not feel like guilty about it and just be like, you know, this is why we have our herbalist friends. And this is why, and it's okay to like ask for help for ourselves. And it's actually important to ask for help for ourselves and our family.
Yeah. I think as a practitioner, it can feel especially vulnerable to see another practitioner because it seems like, oh, I should, you know, there's a lot of shoulds. Like you're having to reveal to somebody that maybe you're not eating the absolute best and you're not taking a break when you should be taking a break and you're not taking your herbs when you should be taking. There's a lot of that going on. So it can feel really vulnerable. And so it's nice. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Margie Flint, who just was in the Herbal Entrepreneur Conference and I loved her session. And she was like, I got a whole team of people to keep this body going, a massage therapist, an acupuncturist, other herbalists, like nutrition, like heart doctor, like everything. And it was so refreshing to hear her say that and just give permission to other practitioners to like, be like, you don't have to do it all yourself, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think this is bringing up for me a really interesting question that I think about a lot, which is that for, at least for me, that partnership model that we were talking about, the ongoing relationship, the sort of objective person to hold space and energy and really devote some time and love to your case, it's such a special model and it isn't something that you see often. And I think part of the issue that many herbalists face is that there isn't a paradigm out that people don't sit, think herbalist and know that. Mm. You know, you think herbalist and you're like, oh, maybe that's somebody out in the field harvesting things, or sure, maybe that's somebody in the health food store and I'll go in there and they'll give me a bottle and I'll get my capsules of whatever. And so I don't, you know, when somebody says a massage therapist, we have a more or less an idea of what that looks like to work with a massage therapist or even a counselor or a therapist. We know what that is, but the paradigm isn't there for most people, for herbalists. And so I think part of our challenge in terms of finding clients is you have to do the education piece first, which is, what is it? Yeah. What does this look like and why would you want it? And sometimes that relationship, like you said, isn't really even about the herbs at all. It's the space, it's the big picture, it's the consistency and the accountability and all of that.
Yeah. And being heard, I think, is like a huge part of it. You know, just having the opportunity to tell your story. And then once you do that, it's like a weight off your chest. And then it's also like an ability for you to see the bigger picture of yourself better. And that's something that we don't do well in the Western medicine world at all.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes, you know, those shoulds, like I'm not really exercising enough, I'm not really eating correctly, like you kind of block those out. You know, you're like repressing them. But then when you actually have a conversation with an herbalist or somebody, and you express what's actually happening in your life, then you can actually realize, you know, you can see it.
Yeah. I actually think it's really valuable as well, because it's good to remember how vulnerable our clients are.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
That sometimes you being on the flip side is one of the best things you can do, just to empathize. And also, I find for me, there's value in going to other practitioners as a client or patient, because I can see what makes me feel held and heard, and what, you know, even in the admin, the signing up process and the connection, all of those things, I can make tweaks to my own process when I realize, oh, actually that's really challenging, or it's really helpful to get that reminder, or whatever it is, it's good to just get that client perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So can you sort of summarize, in your opinion, what it means to be an exceptional, integrity-driven health practitioner?
Yes. Can I summarize it? Oh gosh. For me, what I think the core pieces of it are first of all, just being curious. I think the best practitioners don't come in thinking, oh, this person has PCOS. I haven't even seen them yet. I know exactly what to do. You come in curious to see who is in front of you, and you're open to not knowing or being wrong about, okay, that's what normally we might think about with PCOS, but here's why this person, we're going to do something totally different. So bringing in that willingness to just be really open. And I think there's also the curiosity piece for me is the constant learning. So being willing to be like, oh, what I thought I knew about this is actually not true. Or, you know, like the science has evolved, or my understanding has evolved, or I didn't know this before and now we do. And being willing to sort of let the old pieces go and be present with, okay, it's okay to change. It's okay to do better once you know better. And constantly be updating your information and the way that you do things so that you can serve people better. So to me, those are two of the biggest things. And of course, I also think knowing your limits. Like there's a time and a place for everything. And there have been many times in my practice where I need to say, like, this is outside of my scope, or you need to go to the doctor, you need to go to the emergency room. I've had to say to people, like, this isn't an herbal, this isn't an herbal scenario, or we've gotten to the end of our rope with herbs. You know, we've done what we can do. Same thing with nutrition. Like, I think there's a temptation to think, when you are a nutritionist, sometimes there's a temptation to think, oh, there must be something we can do about the diet. Like there's got to be something we can add more fish or we can add more veggies. Sometimes things are just not related to the diet, mm-hmm. right? Like they're just, it's not stemming from the diet. So maybe we can help people have a better foundation with their food and all this stuff, but there isn't a dietary cause. Mm-hmm. And so you can't make it fit if it doesn't fit. You got to be open to the fact that like, okay, maybe it's genetic or maybe this is due to something else, the environment or whatever else that it's not going to be quote fixed with the diet. And I think sometimes we're trying to fit that round peg into the square hole or whatever the saying is, just being open to like, okay, there may or may not always be something that we can do. I think we can always support the person, but in terms of their hopes around, you know, specific symptoms or conditions or diseases, there may or may not be things that we can do.
Mm-hmm. And supporting the person might be referring them out.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how do you know when to push yourself to maybe learn more about something you've never worked with before versus, oh, this is just not something that I can do. Like I know some cases, maybe it's more obvious, like the emergency room situation, but say you're like working with someone with PCOS and you've never worked with PCOS before, for example.
Right. I think, first of all, it's really good to just tap into your intuition for those things. I think that if you get the first contact, whether it's an email or you meet the person or they request a visit or whatever it is, if you get that little, oh, feeling, you know, there's that, that's the hint to stop and think to yourself, is this something that I can ethically work with? What is my concern?
Yeah.
If the concern is, I don't know enough, then part of it is like, okay, do you have a mentor, a group of people who do know more than you that you can mm-hmm. learn with or from? Do you have a resource that has extensive, you know, information about this that you feel like you could trust and that sort of thing? And then also like, what are the risks? So if somebody has a cancer diagnosis and you've never worked with cancer before, and they're hoping, you know, they can avoid chemotherapy or something. For me, that's a clear line. Like, no, you are not experienced enough to do this. And maybe you could refer to somebody who has lots of experience. Maybe you could say, I'm happy to work with you once you're done with your treatment, whatever. But I think we have to make that decision case by case. But I also think there are times when the stakes are not as high. So it's like, well, if somebody has IBS and you've never worked with IBS before, however, they're not in urgent danger. Mm-hmm. They've tried a bunch of other things. None of the other things have worked. And they're just looking to work with somebody. You could say to them, hey, listen, I've not worked with IBS specifically. Mm-hmm. I think I have some really good ideas. I'd love to work with you. If not, I have some people I could refer you to. So, I mean, I think you could always be very upfront with folks. And I've done that before as well. And sometimes people want to work with somebody else. And sometimes they're like, no, I really, you know, I feel connected with you. I'd like to see what we can do here. And, you know, in those cases, I think it does sometimes make sense to say, why don't we give this a try for 3 months or 6 months or however long, and then say, hey, if we're not noticing a difference, then maybe it makes sense to go to somebody who really specializes in this area and see if they have something else to offer.
That's a great idea. Those are all great ideas. But yeah, the intuition part being the primary, and then having, you know, a really good referral list, or having the timeline of like, let's try this out for a few months and see where we get. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And I think having the support of teacher, mentor, or a group is so crucial to being able to push your envelope or expand your comfort zone, because then you have the expertise of all these other people instead of just relying on only your own, you know,
experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that brings us to the topic of your mentorship program, which seems to be pretty cool. AC's been doing it for a little while now and seems like an awesome program. What's it all about?
Yeah. So actually it's called Monday Mentoring, and I started it in, I think it was 2020. It's all, you know, those last pandemic years are all a blur. But the reason I started it is because I had taken a break from my clinical practice when my kids were younger. I was working full time as a professor and I was like, I can't. Yeah. So I took a little break and then I came back in 2019 and the landscape was really different. There's like a lot of more new technologies and, you know, everything was virtual and all this. And so I restarted my practice and I was like, wow, I'm really not tapped into other practitioners. Like I don't have somebody to ask if there's a tricky case. And I'm, you know, I'm saying, wow, I tried this and what I thought would happen did not happen. Or this client canceled on me 4 times in a row. And did I do the right thing? There wasn't, I didn't have a lot of connections of other people who were actively in practice to talk about. And so I just put an email out to my list of my newsletter. And I was like, hey, is anybody interested in some kind of gathering? And a few people responded and I met with them and talked about what would serve us best, what would be helpful for us to have. And I just put together a program based on those few conversations that I thought would be cool for me and the people I talked to. And so that was when our first Monday mentoring was born. We just met, that group met every Monday at 7:00. And we would, sometimes we discussed cases, people would bring their case and we would all kind of go over that. And sometimes we would talk about practice running, you know, the bits and pieces of cancellations and websites and forms and, you know, money and all those types of things. So we did that. And I think I had 10 or 12 people sign up for that first session. And some of those people are still in Monday Mentoring today, which is really cool. And then after that, it kind of grew. I would open it every few months and then it grew to where I felt like, oh, okay, we're getting too big. So I opened up a couple more sections. So then we had a section that met at noon and a section that met at 5:00 that was for nutritionists. And the idea is just for people who are actively in clinical practice to learn together. So it's a community of practice, which is just about people who are actively engaged in something, trying to get better at it together. So it's really, sometimes I think the name might not be as appropriate because it sounds like mentoring is with me, and it is with me, but it's also really, we have so many amazing practitioners and experiences that if you bring something to the group, there's almost always somebody who has direct experience, either personally or clinically or in their family, and with that scenario or thing or whatever. So it's really nice to just feel like if something tricky happens, I could go to this group of people and receive support or understanding, or at least people saying, wow, that's really hard. And knowing that, there's certain things where you're like, oh, that's, ow. And it's hard to understand if you're not running a practice, a bunch of people unsubscribed from my newsletter, or a client canceled and didn't come back. You know, there's these little things where you're like, oh, it's nice. It could be nice to have somebody who really gets it. And it's like, yeah, that's really hard, but keep going. It'll get better. So that's the intention. And it's now grown. We've got about 80 to 90 members, and it's just really lovely, amazing people, I think. So much fun. I really rely on it now for my own practice that I feel really good about having a group of people there. And it's a kind of a resource for folks who are actively in clinical practice. Does that answer your question? I feel like I got a little off topic there.
No, yeah, no, totally. That gives us a good overview of the Monday Mentoring. So you started it kind of based on a need from yourself that you saw. And of course, other practitioners have experienced of not having that mentorship program. Like if you hadn't just recently graduated from an herb school and you didn't have a teacher that you were in relationship with to like run cases by who was willing to like do that for you.
Or other students.
Yeah. Or other students.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think people were missing that the cohort model that many people go through herb or nutrition school. You graduate and it's harder to stay in touch. You don't have the regularity. And we do have a bunch of people in Monday Mentoring who are, you know, 3, 4, 5 or more years out of school. And so it's nice to have just a regular touch point where you know you can get some support. And also just, I learned so much from the cases other people bring because there's, you know, things that I never had in my clinical practice where you hear, oh, wow, here's how different people are using lemon balm in their clients or whatever else. It's a very expansive to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that having a whether it's like a mentor, like one mentor, or having a group of peers, or both. Both is probably the best. Mm-hmm. But having other people to bounce things off of, having like a round table sort of thing, a council, mm-hmm. you know, that is very valuable for whatever you're doing, you know, but especially when you're learning, and the courses that I've taken that have like that, like a study group kind of thing, those are the best, because then you really get time, have time to like digest and bounce ideas off of other people. And mm-hmm. as we talked about, that objectivity is hard to maintain for yourself.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So who would you say that Monday mentoring is for?
I think the people who are going to get the most out of it are people who are actively in practice working with clients.
Yeah.
And I think essentially anybody who's an herbalist or a nutritionist who's actively in practice seeing clients could get a lot out of it. Who doesn't work as well for is folks who are sort of brand new and haven't yet started, because I think at that point, it's just a different set of questions once you are actively doing it yourself. I tell people, you know, 3 to 6 months before you start to see clients is a good time to kind of join and get into the groove and start asking your questions. But too much before that, and I find it may not be the best use of your time and money. You might want to just focus on getting things set up and get those first clients in the door. And then we're here to kind of come to you for support after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to go into a little bit more detail about the different sessions, you have a noon session, a 5 session, and a 7 o'clock session every Monday. And they're broken up into either apothecary management, where you're like asking questions about making medicine and managing your apothecary, or they're an herbalist round table or a nutritionist round table. So it's kind of focused for the nutritionist in the group and the herbalist in the group. And then sometimes you have like a workshop or hormone deep dive. And what else am I forgetting? Like we have
our practice management sessions.
Practice management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And then once every 2 months, we have a journal club where we read.
Okay, cool.
We go through an article and really parse it, start to learn how to interpret some of the statistics and what can we learn, what can we not learn from a specific journal article.
Cool.
So yeah. But the idea, you know, that we have every week, we have a noon, a 5 and a 7 p.m. Eastern on Mondays. But the idea is for people, you can come to as many as you want, but I tell people just aim for one a week. The whole right. point is just try to devote an hour a week to growing as a practitioner. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be very easy. Like you just show up for 1 hour, learn, mm-hmm. connect. That's it.
Because I know brain muscles for an hour.
Yeah.
Know,
yeah.
That keeps you fresh and keeps you thinking about your practice and inspired and supported.
Exactly. And we have people who can almost never attend live and they watch the recordings, mm-hmm. but I think people get the most out of it if they can come at least sometimes to the live, you know, I think an hour a week live is probably the sweet spot.
Yeah, for sure. Recordings are nice, but doing something live is totally different.
Yeah.
It's working a different part of yeah. your brain too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't speed it up on 1.5.
I know I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I it's interesting because I think a lot of people have questions about building their practice and finding yeah. new clients. And I think a lot of it is about referrals, you know, getting wow. having people know who you are and what you do so they can figure out who's going to be a good fit. Because I was talking about, even if you have two herbalists who both have the same specialty, mm-hmm. they have different energies. And there's some people who are going to resonate better with one versus the other, mm-hmm. but you can't know that until you have a feel for the people. And so part of building referral network is really literally about just showing up places and yeah. letting people get a feel for your energy mm-hmm. and who you are and what you do. And I think Monday Mentoring is a place to do that, among other places. And like you were talking about, Isaac, the study groups in school, you know, like there's programs that have these opportunities for connection or forums or whatever. And there's people who show up on them and there's people who don't. And I feel like the people who consistently show up are better connected because people yeah. know, oh, that's the person who works with IBS. Like, they should constantly, you know, showing up and helping others and cheering them on and supporting people. And you just become known for it when you are there and when people get a feel for you. And so I think that's a big opportunity that a lot of people miss in when they sign up for courses and programs and things. It's like, you can actually get pretty far by just being the person who shows up live and asks the question or says thank you or, you know, participates. There's not that many people do that. And it does make a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then by doing that, you show your vibe, you show your personality.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Even if you don't have a specialty yet, you show what, you know, your character, and that then people have a feeling for you and who would fit well with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I give an example of that?
Yeah.
Really quickly. I last fall, I just had this idea and I was like, I'm going to do a new practitioner week. And it was this free thing where every day for a week, I did a little short 30-minute workshop at lunchtime, Eastern time, about for new practitioners. And it was like, you know, how to find your focus for your practice and how to, I forget all the different things, but it was free. And it was basically just a way for me to get more people on my mailing list and connect with more people and also share these things, help people who are new. And I think, I don't remember exactly, it was like 150 or 200 people signed up for the thing. And not everybody could come live, but a lot of people did. But the people, there weren't that many people who came live and commented and asked questions and or who emailed me afterwards just to say like, oh, I enjoyed it, or to ask a question or something. So of those maybe like 150 or 200 people, there were probably like 5 or 10 who consistently not just came to the sessions, but participated actively and really made themselves known. And I remember every single one of those people's names. I know a little bit about them. I've just been in touch with a couple of them just this last week. And so, like, you know, it's not that hard to stand out in a group of 200 people just by coming to one or two 30-minute things and asking some good questions and saying thank you. Like, that's really, really not hard to start building a network and a community of people who know you if you assume that you make a difference when you show up, which I think people think, oh, I'm just one of a crowd, this little old me. Like, no, you just show up and be there and it does make a difference and you're important.
That's really cool to hear from that perspective of somebody who was like facilitating and teaching a class of, you know, 150, 200 people, that you still remember those 10 that were there. Like, what a great reminder that you do have an impact.
Yeah, totally. It's the same. I don't know if you all find this with your newsletter or the podcast, but I find that there's tons of people on the list, but not that many. If I send out a newsletter, not that many people write back and say, oh, I really enjoyed this, or, you know, this made a great impact on me or whatever. But when they do, I remember, you know, it feels really good to get that message. And then I make a connection. And I'm like, oh yeah, that person's in California. And maybe I click on their website, but you start, you know, if you say thank you to somebody, or if you say like that newsletter made a difference to me, or that podcast episode made a difference to me, it's surprising how few people think it matters and therefore don't do it, but it does matter.
Yeah. Can I also just say that I love your email list?
I was not fishing for compliments.
No, but like, there's only like 3 email newsletters that I open and you're one of them. And I feel like you just offer a good balance of like story and educational things. Like, you know, here are some articles or books that I just read and really thought were cool, or a podcast episode that I liked, as well as like keeping us in the loop of what you're doing and what's new and what workshops are coming up and things like that.
Thanks. So,
good job. Yeah.
What's interesting me right now too, though, is having this experience of doing the Monday mentoring and seeing all these practitioners, especially like newer practitioners, people getting a leg up still. And you said that one of the biggest challenges for people is getting referrals and so on. Are there other things that you see happening for newer practitioners, like challenges?
Things that come up again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There are so many. I'm like, we have to wrap up before midnight, right?
Yeah.
So I think if I have to sum it up or say a few things, for me, one of the biggest things I see is that people think that you're just going to kind of roll in there and open your doors and get your website open. And then people are going to come and you're going to have a practice.
Right.
And you have to work at it is the thing. Like it's not for most people. I'm not going to say never, but for most people, you've got to show up like over and over and over again, repeatedly, and try things. And sometimes they're not going to work. And I think if you're not used to this, it's easy to try something and be like, well, nobody wants this. Oh no, that's it. You're like, oh, I guess my practice isn't working, but nobody wants it for a long time. Sometimes you have to just keep going. And it's really hard in the beginning to keep moving forward, to keep doing it when it feels like nobody's listening and it feels like you're not making a big difference. So that for me, that's the hardest thing is that you, in order to get through that part, you really have to intentionally choose that this is your work. I think a lot of people are expecting to sort of roll it out and be like, oh yeah, it's happening. And if it's not, then there's something wrong with you and nobody wants what you offer. And in fact, it just takes a lot of work and belief in yourself and belief in the herbs or the food or whatever to tap into that. Like, I know that this is helpful for people. I feel really committed to bringing this. And then you got to co-create with the community you want to serve about how they can use your help.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of experimentation for way longer than people think it's going to take. And I forget, there's somebody, some major marketing person who uses this analogy, which I think is really helpful, which is that if you're trying to get people to know about you, it's kind of like melting an ice cube when it's in a really, really cold environment. Mm. And so you know, let's say your ice cube is at negative 50 and you're trying to melt it and you're going to have to keep turning the heat up, right? But when you go from negative 50 to negative 20, it's not, the ice cube is still solid, like hasn't melted, but you've made a huge, you know, you're so much closer than you were, but you can't see it. And then you do another big leap and you're still not there. And you're like, I've been doing all this work and nothing's happening. And it's like, well, it is happening, but you can't see it.
Oh, cool.
And then eventually you get to where you get up to that 32 degrees and all of a sudden it slowly starts to melt, but it's taken, you've got to live through that first part of where it's like, you're doing all this stuff and nothing is happening. It feels like hardly anything. Sometimes I guess for some people, maybe it's like really fast, but yeah. Hasn't been my experience for most people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's easy to get discouraged.
Totally. Totally. And I think it's also easy to just assume the problem is you. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I just got another training, right. If I just made my website a little better, mm-hmm. if I just, you know, that there's some deficiency that you haven't quite met. And in mm-hmm. fact, it's not, most people don't need more training. Most mm-hmm. people need more connection with their community. And that's the hard, because it's visibility, it's vulnerability. You got to go out there and be like, I want to help. How can I help? And ask people if they need help and talk about what you do and explain it in ways they understand. Like, it's hard. It's visibility work and it's really hard.
Yeah. So that's what people should be working on is the education and the visibility and just being out there in the community.
Yeah.
So like going to health fairs and showing up at online events, or maybe having a workshop at your library or something like that.
Or meeting other practitioners or talking mm-hmm. to people, you know, going on blogs and podcasts and talking about, you know, maybe there's a PMS blog out there and you could write something for them or whatever it is that you do. Speaking to people, telling your friends and family, like, hey, I work with people who have PMS, or I work with new moms, mm-hmm. or I work with whatever. But just speaking about what you do and being really courageous about saying, yeah, this is who I help offering. You got to try offering different stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The library and the mm-hmm. meeting massage therapists who also work with your folks or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of times people don't write back or people don't sign up for the thing. And it's easy again to just be like, well, that didn't work. Sometimes you just got to keep going. You just keep going.
Yeah. Cause that could put your name in their mind and they might not respond mm-hmm. that time, but maybe the third time or the fifth time, you know, totally. where they don't even respond, but they mention your name to somebody else who, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. I have people on my email list who I've never heard a peep from them. They've just been there for, you know, 5 years in some case, and then they might buy a workshop. But, mm-hmm. but like, you know, there was a 5-year lag time. It wasn't like I met them and then they were like, let me just sign up for Camille's thing.
Right. Yeah. that's so true. Can you tell us a little bit about your favorite tools as a practitioner, like what you're using for keeping track of things and, I don't know, things that make your job easier?
Yes. I know that you and I have a shared interest in tech bits.
Little tech nerds over here.
Tech nerds. Yes. Well, I have found that Practice Better is incredibly helpful for running my practice. Mm-hmm. I really, that is one of the things that changed a lot from when I took a break before, well, mm-hmm. when my kids were very young to 2019, those mm-hmm. types of tools became available. And I think that Practice Better probably saves me 30 to 45 minutes on each new client.
Wow.
Of things that I would have been doing manually, you know, like scheduling appointments and taking payments and sending forms and reminders and setting up Zoom, like all those things. It just, I'm not involved with them at all at this yeah. point. Nothing.
What is it's Practice Better? So what
practice
is that?
Practice Better. It's an electronic medical record. I don't know if we call it medical because it's mostly designed for, you know, like nutritionists, herbalists, coaches, that sort of thing. But it's essentially keeps, it does all your scheduling and payment and so forth, but it also has, it's a platform that your client can log into and share things with you. You can write your notes for them and they can see them. They can chat with you if they have questions, all that type of thing. So it essentially kind of holds everything related to client care and client interactions. And I love it because I don't need to email my clients anymore either. Hmm. One of the big struggles for me right now at this point in my life and my practice is just kind of managing the quantity of communications I get from various, you know, yeah. all the things. And so for me, it's very hard to keep track of client emails if they come in addition to everything else. And yeah. it's not very secure from a HIPAA perspective and so right. forth. So I have all my clients just message me in Practice Better and mm-hmm. I do not set reminders for myself. So like, I don't get a notification. So I only see their messages when I actively choose to log in to Practice Better. Mm. So for me, it's really helpful. I'm not all day long getting like, oh, this client has a question about that. That one has, and it's hanging over me because I can't oh, answer gosh. It right now, but I'm like, I need to get back to them about whatever. So I'm like, no, I'll just log in. I usually do every other day. I log in and I answer all the client questions at once mm-hmm. and I don't see them until then, which is mm-hmm. really mentally helpful for me.
Yeah. That is. Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's like there in the back of your head, like, you got to do this. You got to do this.
Yeah, exactly. And I it's very stressful for me. It's very stressful for me. So mm-hmm. that, you know, and there's lots of, I'm not saying Practice Better is the only one. There's other, you know, there's one called Jane and there's one called Healthy and all these other ones. So for me, Practice Better is the best fit, but it's an expenditure. You know, I think depending on what price point and how many clients you have, there is a monthly expenditure. And for me, it's just well worth it.
Yeah.
Well worth it.
Less than having a personal assistant, probably.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. It's substantially less than having a person. I mean, I'm on the highest plan for individuals and I think it's $89 a month. So certainly could not get a personal assistant for that price.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. In terms of other platforms that I use, I use MailerLite for my mailing list and mm-hmm. they have a generous free plan. I'm not on it anymore because the number, you know, once you get up to a certain number, mm-hmm. you have to start paying. But I find that that's a great one for beginners to start an email list because mm-hmm. it's just, you know, it has a lot of bells and whistles, but it's pretty easy to get going with. And like I said, the free plan goes up to, I think 1,000 or 2,000 people. I don't remember. So yeah, you can get a lot of mileage from that. I'm trying to think of some of the other little bits and pieces. What is there? Are there any specific things? Because I've got lots.
What do you use for Monday mentoring? For that?
Oh, yes. That's one I really do highly recommend. There are lots of platforms out there for courses. The big ones are Kajabi, Thinkific, Teachable, and they essentially, these are platforms that help you manage an online course. So they'll have, you know, places for people to sign up and you can do your live sessions and put your content there and people can take their quizzes or whatever else. They're pretty expensive and they all have a lot of limitations. So I have used four different platforms for Monday mentoring.
Oh, wow.
Over the 3 or 4 years of its existence. That's a lot. Yeah, uh-huh. Because I'm trying to find the sweet spot for what our needs are a little bit different from a classic course where, you know, it's not a course, it's a sort of an ongoing membership scenario, but it's also based on live, you know, the heart of it is just showing up live. That's really it. And so a lot of them aren't really set up around that concept. Most of them are sort of pre-recorded courses that people can take.
Yeah.
That's not the same concept of Monday mentoring. So a couple of years ago, I found a platform called Zendler. And it's been really, really great for me. The only thing, a downside about Zendler is that it is not super aesthetically pleasing, which is hard for me because I do care about how things look. I like to twiddle around with websites and stuff. So I have, you know, I don't think it looks terrible, but it did take some tweaking to get it not terrible.
Right.
So it's like a little bit dated in its appearance, but the feature, it's very, very affordable compared to all those other options I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And the features are great. Like, for example, Zendler includes a Zoom account. Ooh. So you don't need to pay for your own Zoom account. And it also includes Zoom webinars, which is something that's normally $200 a month. You know, that's like the official webinar feature where people can only ask questions. You can't see them, etc. Mm-hmm. I don't use that often, but it's part of the membership. It's part of the Zendler platform. So it, you know, it has its flaws like everything else, but in terms of being able to do what I want it to do, for example, I have guest facilitators that come in and do some of the Monday mentoring sessions, and they can easily get in there. People can log in and, you know, update, they could cancel their membership. They can update their credit card, all those things. Mm-hmm. So I've been really pleased with Zendler, and I definitely would recommend it, especially if you're on a little bit of a budget.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't heard of that one except for, you know, through experiencing Monday mentoring. I've used Circle and Mighty Networks before for online programs, and they're also kind of not the most aesthetically pleasing, but it's like, it's a cool online emerging, not feature, but like option for us, you know, like, to be able to have these online communities and anything where I'm not trying to do something through a Facebook group, I'm happy. Like,
exactly. Yeah. I am not on social. Actually, I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm not on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And it's really hard for me when some of these programs do have like their main group area is a Facebook group. And I'm like, I don't want that.
No, I don't want that at all.
But wait, you mean to tell me that you're being a successful practitioner and you're not on social media?
I mean to tell you that.
You did it. real connections with people like the world?
No. I stopped social media. I can't remember when. It was sometime post the Donald Trump election, and I was like, I cannot.
Yeah.
Cannot anymore. Okay. It was too much mental health wise, time wise. I just didn't feel like it was serving me. Mm-hmm. So I just stopped cold turkey. I didn't like do a flounce or anything. I just stopped. And I was just going to try it for a year, not being on social. And it actually, I was like, oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. It's great. So I just never really went back. I am on LinkedIn right now just because we'll do a whole nother episode on that. But that I just started that a couple months ago. It's very slow. I love it. I could log in like once a week and interact with a few people I like, and that's it. But otherwise I'm not. And the main thing is it's the newsletter, like the email list. If I didn't have an email list, it would not work to not be on social. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you want to know what I'm doing, you have to just sign up for my email list. That's it. Otherwise you just don't know. And so people do.
For a lot of people, like the main reason they have social is to get people to sign up to their email list, because that's a way to really build lasting connections, especially in a time where your social media platform is pretty volatile or can change quickly. And, you know, I thought Instagram was really cool, and then Facebook bought it. And
totally. Right? I also, you know, I'm always talking to people too about how a large social media following almost never translates to a lot of clients.
Wow.
You know, like those people with super large social followings are monetizing via advertising, product placement, other things.
Yeah, that's like their job.
That's their job. but they're not, most of those folks are not just turning clients away left and right. If your job, if your work is individual one-on-one consulting, then you want to be, like you said, you want to be building one-on-one relationships with people.
Yeah.
And if you can do that on social media, great. If that works for your mental health, but it, most of the time, it's not about getting followers. It's about posting on people. It's about posting on other people's posts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if that's, if your goal is to build relationships, then instead of you just speaking into the void, what you want to be doing is responding to other people's and being like, wow, I loved this. Great work. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like engage. Don't just like post and not respond. So anyway, but you do not need social to build a practice. It's one way, but not the only way.
Thank you for that reminder. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, also seems like sometimes if you're so focused on the social, it's like, that's where all your extra time goes then too. And you don't have time.
Yeah.
To have clients.
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm always telling people, you know, the strategy to think about is like, okay, you do want a way that you can meet people that don't know about you. For, you know, that's, you have, if you want to have new clients, you have to meet people that don't know about you already somehow. And social media is one way to do that, but you need to see if it's working. You know, like if your goal for social media is that's how I'm going to meet new people, and then you go a full year on social media and you've never gotten a new client from it, then you have to get a different strategy. Like that, then it's not working. It's not a good use of your time. If it is working and you're like, yes, tons of people are going from my Instagram to my newsletter and then from my newsletter and signing up to work with me, then awesome. It's working and it's probably worth the time. Yeah. But if it's, if you're spending 10 hours a week dealing with Instagram and you get 2 clients a year from it, then that's not, it's not serving your need. Maybe it's serving your social needs, but from a like clinic perspective, it's not, you got to count that as personal time, not work
time.
It's a
distraction, really.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Any tips real quick on building an email list, since, you know, that's something that you are, you're focusing on and kind of depend on for staying in touch with people and building your clients and all of that?
Yeah. So I think part of the deal with the email list is to think about using it to actually serve the people who are reading it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I see a lot is that people are using their email list and they're thinking like, I'm just going to sort of advertise on it. You know, like I'm just going to, I'm going to do this. And I, my, what I'm always telling people is think about how you can actually help the reader in a small way today.
Mm.
You know, like what would they like to receive or what would be helpful for them to receive, even if they never, ever sign up to work with you. And if sometimes, for example, if you're a nutritionist, sometimes that means I'm going to send out one recipe a week of a dinner you can make in 15 minutes or less. Nice. I personally would really like to get that email, you know, or you got to know who you're writing to in order to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, they feel like their gift is really helping people contextualize or storytelling. So they tell like a funny or a meaningful or interesting story every week, and that's how they're helping. Other people, it's helpful if you have, for example, like really busy clientele and they're, you know, barely able to do anything. Maybe it's helpful for them to just be like, hey, just a friendly reminder, here are 4 events in our community coming up this week. You know, like the farmers market's Monday, the Earth Fair is Tuesday, and library reading time is Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be a huge service. It doesn't have to be a long, involved thing.
Sure.
Someone was telling people, like, you can have a short email, you can have a long email, but what would your client really love or appreciate receiving, and to write that? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing. It's like, if it's not about manipulating people to get on your list or whatever, but it's just like, I'm just going to help. I'm just going to show up and help. It's
filling the need.
Yeah. And it's like one of the only, if you're working one-on-one, your email newsletter is an opportunity for you to help people who can never work with you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's like part of your influence in the world is just sharing what you have to share. And so, you know, there's so many good ways to do it, but more so than like how to get people to sign up, I think is if you just write a really useful one and then you describe it. You're like, hey, if you want a recipe that takes 15 minutes or less every Tuesday, sign up for a new newsletter. then the people who want that will sign up and the people who don't are going to not your people and they won't sign up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I think that's crucial to actually be helpful in your email list, because that's, I mean, it's the reason I don't open many emails.
Yeah, totally.
You get kind of, there's a lot of them, you know, and you only have time for so many.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I know we have to finish by like midnight, but no. But I do have just one more quick question, if that's okay.
Sure.
You do so much and so many different things. How do you manage your time and attention to balance your family, your own education and learning and growth and your clients, and then your students and the folks you run day mentoring? Like, how do you balance all of that?
Yes, poorly sometimes. I think there's lots of things I have in place to manage it. I have a partner, and that helps. He's actually out of town for several weeks right now, but I normally do have a partner who can help with childcare and cooking. We also have a house cleaner. And that, I mean, I like to be really transparent about this, because I do not have time to do house cleaning. And so we pay somebody to do that. And then I also try to, what's the word for it, block my time. So I'll have like Wednesday as my clinic day. Mm-hmm. Monday is my Monday mentoring / administrative day.
Okay.
Tuesday and Thursday, I'm usually doing teaching stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Friday is sort of a flex day or a kid day. Mm-hmm. And so that really helps me if I know, you know, what's happening on which days. Then I'd be like, okay, I know on Monday I'll get a chance to do all the little over, you know, little bits, like, oh, I've got to schedule this new thing and set up the Zoom for that and deal with my schedule. All those things can just happen on Monday. And I can do that. Wednesday is client day. I've got a bunch of client slots. It's all kind of in one place.
Yeah.
So that really helps me. But other times it's just, you know, it's like a juggling act. And if I drop one thing, they all just fall to the ground. And then it's like, okay. So it's not always the greatest, but I'm in a constant process of, there's so many things I want to do. And
yeah,
trying to edit and be like, all right, just like with the clients, gotta be like, okay, I can slowly roll some of these out. I don't have to start all the new things all at once, but just to, you know, be a little bit more measured about what I'm doing when. And that's, so that's what I do, for what it's worth.
Love it.
Yeah. I feel like I'm juggling a lot of times. I only have so many hands, and if I have to take on too many tasks, then just some of them don't happen. I end up not doing them.
Yeah. So well, you know, like I was saying earlier about the inbox, I've been able to do it okay until really the last 6 to 8 months. And it's just gotten to where there's nothing in there that I don't want to respond. It's not like spam.
Right.
But I literally don't know when I'm going to respond. And so I am thinking about hiring a company that specializes in inbox management, just to have like a first layer of person to, some of the questions could be answered by somebody else. So I'm actually thinking about trying to hire basically an assistant to do my inbox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then it's a whole nother podcast episode, but then it's a question of like, oh, financially it's a big investment. And then,
right,
you got to trust that your income is there and all those things, which are, you know, sort of big questions.
Yeah, it's a balancing act in itself of when you're growing your business, sometimes you do need to hire out, but then you're like, am I actually going to be able to afford hiring out? Or is that keeping me on the hamster wheel of like having to make more money to pay for the employee?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Or should I just let those emails go?
Right, exactly. I know. Yeah. You know what I didn't mention is that I do actually have a virtual assistant.
Oh, cool.
But she helps me with, like, she will post all the Monday mentoring recordings. She goes in and downloads the recordings and posts them. And
that's awesome.
Handles some of the, like, the admin types of things. So we do have that person as well, which is great. That really helps. And she really just works a couple hours a week, but it does make a big difference for me.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Well, yeah. Speaking of time management, thank you for spending some of your time with us.
Seriously, this has been awesome.
Helpful.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun to chat with both of you and be on the podcast.
Yeah. So if folks want to sign up for your email list and learn more about your work, tell us where they can go. And if there's anything that's coming up that's exciting for you, please feel free to share it with our listeners.
Yes. So my website is just CamilleFreeman.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there. If you want to go right to the newsletter sign up page, it's CamilleFreeman.com/newsletter. And the big thing on the horizon is that Monday Mentoring will be opening for new members in the middle to the end of May. So people want to learn more about that. It's just CamilleFreeman.com/Monday Mentoring, and you can get on the wait list, and I will let you know when it opens. Usually we open in the spring, late spring, and then again in the fall. So if now isn't the right time, they can perhaps join us another time.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. Well,
thank you so much again, Camille. This has been awesome, and I appreciate you so much and all of your work.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.